The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive. Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books. I'm Craig Wade.
And I'm Brian Allen Delaney.
And we got a humdinger of a marathon of a show.
Marathon?
Yeah, it's not a marathon show. Sorry.
It's like a one movie and two short stories.
It'll be a tight hour. But it'll feel like a marathon.
Just the like show is off to a great start.
Just like the movie that we will cover felt like a marathon. Anyway, we are
spoilers.
We're covering Coons, Night Bandits of the Night.
No. Night of the Bandits of the Night.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All right. Which is like the best subtitle for a movie ever.
So we're doing that. I don't know the director's name, but it was released by Troma. And Brian, what book are you covering?
Oh, I just had that. It's Mobsters, Monsters, and Nazis. By Dan O'Brien.
Yeah, and I'm doing Give Me Something Good to Eat by Shane McKenzie. So with that, what's new this week?
Not much, I guess. No, I have a news that's not like really mine, but it's my wife's news. If I can plug that a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
She started doing or selling like prints on Etsy. And then also she has some prints up in Toxic City, the home base of our sister podcast, Adventures of Toxic City, which hopefully we'll have a new episode soon. But anyway, right now it's Doctor Who prints and everything, but eventually we're looking to expand into other things like Walking Dead,
Supernatural.
Supernatural is actually on the list.
I would assume that would be your next go-to.
But it's she's working under the, I guess, pseudonym. I guess, well, not really a pseudonym if it's like a business name, right? Black River Art House. Which sounds weird, but that's our last name is Delaney, which means Black River in Gaelic. So there you go.
Nice. Yeah. No, like a pseudonym would be like, you know, she's working under the name like, you know, Blackie Rivers.
Yeah. Wow. Blackie Rivers is a terrible name.
Dude, I keep thinking about... Because actually, something I haven't really briefed you on, one of my things that I've been writing for a while is actually getting pretty far.
Like, really?
Yeah, I might actually publish something. But now I'm toying with the fact, do I go with a pseudonym? Do I not?
No, don't do it, dude.
I know, but I really, like, I work a job that's not, like, you know, like, artsy in any way. I work with numbers all day and stuff.
Yeah, and so then they'll probably not even, like, ever look.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is I really don't want, you know, people reading things that I write. That's a good recipe for success, right? Yeah. But anyway, if I do go with a pseudonym, I might go with Blackie Rivers now.
That's a good one. You have my permission. I was going to add it to my list of alternate names, but you can go with it. You can use it.
Roll with it. Okay.
Blackie Rivers. It sounds like a C-grade porn star.
Blackie Rivers. Yeah. Yeah, other than that, what else has been new? Trailers?
Yeah, there's the one that I mentioned that I really want to talk about, which is He Never Died.
Uh-huh.
With Henry Rollins.
Yeah.
I think it combines pretty much everything I look for in a movie.
namely Henry Rollins.
Henry Rollins is up there. No, I really like Henry Rollins as an actor.
I think he's okay as an actor.
But I think it's just he always gets like not funny characters to play, but just like interesting to see him in that role, right? Because like he always comes off as like, yeah, I know.
And like Black Flag was like anti, you know.
He was in Sons of Anarchy. Did you ever watch that?
As no, I didn't watch.
Neo-Nazi white supremacist, which was awesome.
That would be odd because he's like so progressive. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I forgot during the trailer of He Never Died, what were they playing? Oh, it was a Black Keys song. And I was like, I wonder if Henry Rollins likes the Black Keys. but I would
like to think no.
But basically, okay, so the premise of He Never Died, I would like to think no as well. They're a shit band, right?
I'm not going to get into that.
No, let's get into it. Why not? The Black Keys suck.
God, that one song is just straight up Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah, and then the other one straight up some Tom Petty, what was it, Last Dance with Mary Jane?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
and it's, then they've
it's
also
totally Last Dance with Mary Jane.
Yeah.
And which, there's like a White Stripes song that's Last Dance with Mary Jane also.
Did you ever see him and he and Jack White's feud recently? Like
Black
Jack White
Keys and White Stripes.
Huh? It's Black Keys and White Stripes. Yeah, they're like, I don't know, they hate each other because they think each other's music sucks. I don't know. Apparently which Jack White almost fist fought him.
Which is funny because like they seem to have, I don't know much about the Black Keys, but they seem to have that old school like vintage mentality, you know, where you do things actually like on tape and everything like that, like Jack White does. And
does the Black Keys actually do that, or do you?
I don't know because they seem like they do.
And there are only two people.
Yeah.
So like a full on band fight between them would just be four people
just slapping each other.
Yeah.
Oh man, I recently watched It Might Get Loud. I know this is like 5 years old, 6 years old.
That's a cool movie.
It was so good.
Except for whenever the Edge was talking yoga. Like that, just I was like, I could do without the Edge,
you yoga know, from just Wales,
the Edge in general. But yeah, no. So back
that was
to the
hell of a tangent.
Yeah, He Never Died.
Yeah.
So basically, like,
Supernatural.
It's just right. Kind of a guy that's cursed that never dies, and then toward the end of it, it drops a spoiler as to
Bible
who he
bomb.
Is. Yeah, we got Bible bombed. He is Cain, right?
That's what it said, or that's what he said. But like, he has like scars on his back where, say, wings would have been removed. And I'm going that way because the trailer or the poster is him with wings. You know, so I don't know. I don't remember Cain being an angel. But we'll see.
Yeah, I must have skipped that part.
We'll see how that goes. But I'm super interested in it.
Yeah, it's looks great.
You know, supernatural noir sort of thing. I'm totally down for that. What did you call it? Just yeah, that's
trying to, oh, God. Oh, art house crank with a film noir bent. Yeah, it looks, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't quite look art housey, but it just looks like a subdued type action film. You know, I don't know. I dig the trailer. It could come out and be the worst movie ever, which wouldn't surprise me if Henry Rollins is the lead because he's I'm not saying like Henry Rollins is awesome. His movies, a lot of the time, he's not in that many good movies. I don't care what anyone says. You can't convince me. Like, was Bad Boys 2 good? No.
Bad Boys 1 was good.
I don't remember if he was in that. He probably was.
I don't think he was.
But I don't know. He was in Feast. I loved Feast.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. I don't know. I watched Salad Days 2 weeks ago about the early punk scene in, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And he just seemed like he seems crankier every day.
Yeah, but he seems like such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And then he had that show on the History Channel.
What was it? Intense History.
No, it was like 10 Things You Didn't Know About or whatever.
Oh, really?
And he would go, yeah.
Yeah, I never saw that.
He would go learn. And then, like, every place he would be in, he would go, like, visit the record stores.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Oh, Midnight Special. Okay. So it doesn't really give away a lot of what's going on in the Midnight Special trailer, but it looks really, really cool. It's like this kid that basically can, like, he just has, his eyes will, like, glow red, and then he has these crazy powers. It looks a lot like Looper.
Though, right?
It looks a lot like Looper in that sense, where there's just this kid that's crazy powerful, and his dad is trying to protect him. Like, a lot like Looper, you know? But in this, he almost, it looks like he summons like a bubble that covers over the city type, under the dome type.
Is it sort of like what's that episode with the kid who sends people to the cornfield?
No, because he's not like evil. And it's almost that like he has like a seizure.
I said, that kid was just a brat.
Yeah. Well, this kid's like not evil. I don't know if he's evil or not, because it was one of those kind of like
glowing red eyes and crazy powers.
Yeah, but I mean, he doesn't seem to be evil. He's just like scared in the back of a car. You know, like, I don't know. I'm judging all this off a teaser. You know, it could just be a fever dream that the dad had, you know, who knows? Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it looks really cool. It's by the director of Take Shelter, which was an insane movie. And it's got Michael Shannon in it. I always like Michael Shannon in movies because he's just a odd actor. Even Bug, like, I mean, I never really, I don't know. Yeah, I guess saw him as the Red Skull, but that would probably be his biggest role, was just as the Red Skull in Marvel. What?
Oh, that was that guy's name?
Yeah, Michael Shannon.
Agent Smith?
What? He wasn't Agent Smith, was he?
If it's the dude who played the Red Skull.
Well, I thought, hold on. Whoa. Yeah, no, I thought Michael Shannon was the guy from.
No. Michael Shannon's Zod, right?
Was he Zod?
Am I just like totally ruining things? Are we about to just look up tons of stuff on IMDb?
Yeah, maybe we pause.
No, we're good. No, but, Michael Shannon.
I thought he was the Red Skull.
That was the dude who played Agent Smith in The Matrix, and he was also the one elf guy in Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Huh. Well, I guess.
Yeah, Michael Shannon is Zod.
Huh.
He was on At Midnight.
Maybe the Red Skull just looks like Michael Shannon.
He was on At Midnight the other day, Michael Shannon. Uh-huh. And he was really, really funny. Like, really funny.
I like him. I think he's a good actor. And like,
oh yeah, he's really good in Boardwalk Empire too.
Oh really?
Yeah.
He was good in that shit, what was the name of that movie? It was about Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Where he was the manager. I mean, it wasn't about him. It was about Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. He was just like,
about Joan Jett and the Blackhearts manager.
He's just like, yeah, I manage them.
Hugo Weaving is the other guy.
Oh yeah. Okay. But no, I mean, he's just a really, really good actor. And like Bug, I don't know if I liked or hated Bug. That's one that's odd. But his performance was like just totally batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah, like, he's batshit crazy.
I like that he can go there real easily. And so anyway, but he's like the father to this kid. And
like, don't take this the wrong way, Michael Shannon, because I know you're listening, right? But he's got like the crazy eyes, so it makes it a lot easier for him to look like go batshit crazy. Right? Like, he looks like he could be crazy.
Dude, that's not cool, man.
Michael Shannon's going to get mad at me.
Well, I was going to say we're going to lose our sponsor, which is the Crazy Eyes Foundation. But anyway, no, yeah, that's about it as far as trailers go. So this has been a real shit podcast. Sorry, guys.
It's great.
Anyway, yeah,
we're bringing it back to our roots.
But
wait, hold on. Did you have anything else?
No, go ahead.
I was going to give a quick like plug, I guess, shout out to another podcast that just started that I did the art and the music to. It's called the 90s Called. A guy named Brian Klaus is doing it up in Minnesota.
Yeah.
They've only had one episode so far. It was about Saved by the Bell. Pretty good. Yeah. Go check it out. The artwork hurt me to do because it was like against everything I stood for as a, like any sort of designer or anything.
290s.
He said like make it as 90s as possible or whatever. I believe he also like said something about, you know, if Lisa Frank threw up on Saved by the Bell or something like that.
Dude, but honestly, real art hurts.
Yeah, you got to suffer for your art. But anyway, you go check it out. It's up on iTunes and stuff. By the time this comes out, there's probably going to be episode 2 something. But yeah,
give
a quick shout out.
All right.
Other than that, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, we'll be right back.
Damn it, why won't you get out of my head? 2:30 in the morning and I lie awake, can't bed. Man, do I hate love songs, but you're always on my mind. My pencil turns to mush from the words my lips can't find. You're ruining my pad and you ruin my routine. And now I gotta figure out who I'm supposed to be. I'm not the guy with birds dancing around his head. I'd rather hate the government and protest shit instead. But now I'm writing a love song cause you're always on my mind. My pencil turns to mush from the words my lips can't find. I get myself close, but you let yourself in. So I finally wrote a love song, congratulations, you win.
Welcome back. That was Happy Campers with their song, I Finally Wrote a Love Song, that was featured heavily in this movie.
Yeah. As well, the Happy Campers were... That was a terrible sentence.
Yeah. Which is kind of odd. They were... Like, I always liked the Happy Campers. They were good, and they were actually nice people. Me and Brian used to run a record label. A very, very horrible... it was a good label. It just didn't have any... You know, hits.
Well, thinking back on it, you know what probably is the reason it didn't work? Well, first of all, there was absolutely no money.
What?
That's probably the reason why it failed.
Yeah.
Apparently, you need a lot of money to run
good compilations by our friends and stuff and bands we'd played with. And they actually, that song was on. Was it on the first or second?
It was on second.
Yeah. Yeah.
Entitled The Million Dollar Monkey.
Yeah, you can get it by just hitting us up and sending us $1 in the mail. $2. We want $2 now. So, anyway. But, yeah, we...
Demand skyrocketed. Everyone saw it.
Yeah, but it kind of threw me out of the movie because since they were actually in the movie, I was like, those guys look familiar. And then it's like, the Happy Camper? What?
What threw me off is like, you know, they were clearly...
fake playing?
Like fake playing, but they were doing it so terribly.
Yeah, but they're like, a real band.
They're the real band that wrote that song.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was on purpose, but it was bad.
So what was this movie again?
Coons! Night of the Bandits of the Night.
Yeah. All right. And
if you want to find it on IMDb, you have to put that entire thing in there.
Yeah. As well, how I found it, I was like, this is Troma. Troma generally puts most of their movies on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And so I searched Coons, and then there was like a million other like different movies and different clips of raccoons and stuff. And I was like, Coons Troma, and it popped up immediately. Nice. So anyway,
it's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I would imagine it's probably, well, I think Troma pulled off Netflix for the most part. They used to be on Netflix, like almost everything. But it's like a lot of the distributed movies, they just kind of give away now, except for the ones that, you know, Lloyd Kaufman makes.
Yeah.
You know. But, yeah, you don't happen to know the budget off the top of your head.
IMDb, it has an estimated budget. Where did it go? I thought it did. It was like really low.
Yeah,
I think it was actually less than the last movie we watched.
Yeah, which we were, you know, this is Microvember, and so we're doing micro budget movies.
Budget $5,000 estimated.
Okay. So the Weirdsies was $5,000 too.
Okay,
and so
yeah. Interesting.
So yeah, this is so also between it being low budget and it being a killer animal movie, we knew we had to watch it.
Oh yeah,
pretty much.
I mean, that's kind of a theme with us, it seems, as of late.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that I've had more fun watching anything this year than watching Rise of the Animals. Like, I think as every day passes, like, I like that movie more.
Because it was just, okay, it was so bad that it just looped back around to being, like, one of the best things I've ever seen.
Rise of the Animals?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this movie, I don't know. I think, honestly, this movie, it had some humor. It had some blood, had some guts, had some horrible puppets and horrible special effects.
I'm pretty sure they were just taxidermied raccoons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am 100% positive they were just taxidermied raccoons.
I will say that the biggest downfall of this movie, in my opinion, we didn't get a plot. Basically, we didn't give like a plot summary, but I mean, it's raccoons
attack people at a camp.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done with the plot now.
Yeah, and they can like kill you by throwing their shit, which is something I didn't think raccoons did. Do they throw shit?
I didn't think so, but they have little hands.
They do, but they like use it to wash freaking like fruits and shit.
I know. I always thought of raccoons as being cleaner animals, let me clarify, even though they dig through people's garbage, because like I always see them washing their hands.
Yeah. Yeah, they wash their tiny little hands. I'll never. excuse me.
So my dad told me once about whenever he was growing up, there was this like raccoon or whatever. It might have been at a deer lease, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Back in the day, there was this raccoon that was like semi-domesticated, like, you know, like you would feed squirrels at a park sort of thing, right? And they would feed it pieces of cake. Right. And it would go down to the little river that was next to it and try to wash the cake, and the cake would just dissolve in the water and it would get all sad and disappointed. Anyway, I just wanted to share that raccoon related story for a second.
Nice. Yeah, I like raccoons. I wanted to tell my little raccoon story.
Okay, go for it.
At U of H Clear Lake. Where I went to college, I didn't have friends. I waited for you to take a drink.
Oh my God. Is this going to be about you befriending a raccoon?
Yes. So I didn't have friends. It wasn't like a college that you like stayed at, you know, it wasn't like
heard this story.
You didn't?
I don't think so.
All right. So every day, like, this raccoon would hang out by the stairs, right? And just kind of like try to befriend people. And so one day I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this raccoon the time of day. Like, I don't know anyone here. No one cares. And so I follow the raccoon because he's clearly like waiting for somebody. And like I follow him and like he walks like 5 feet and looks back and walks. And like he's like gesturing me to come on. Right. Okay. He leads me to a trash can, like a cement trash can. And then like pushes and then looks back at me and like pushes. He was trying to help, like me, get me to
get
help
you to push him over the
push
trash,
over a trash can. And I was like, no wonder I have no friends here.
Did you do it?
No, I got kicked out of school. But
did you at least dig out a little bit of trash from the top for your new raccoon friend?
No, but I was like, nice try, you little fuzzy bastard.
Well played, raccoon.
But yeah, that would have been a better story had like we become like lifelong friends.
Yeah.
You know, we're Facebook friends and stuff. Now.
But it's like you like you like his posts occasionally, but you don't really ever talk to him. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. But anyway, no. Yeah. So these raccoons in this movie were not like that. They were little shitheads. They basically just tried to kill people, and sometimes it like shocked the people into being like zombified.
Well, no, they mentioned it. It was like this parasite that raccoons apparently have in their scat. They kept calling it scat. But you know, it's like it was one of those zombie parasites. If people don't know, like, there are actual zombie parasites,
yeah,
you should look it up. It's terrifying. Mm-hmm. But, so it's like one of those, and then apparently they also had rabies. So like some of the victims that got the poop in their mouth became like rabies zombies, complete with blacked out eye bands like a raccoon.
Yeah, but most of the people they just killed.
Yeah, they just straight up died.
I was like, I wish they had picked one or the other. I kind of think
like if the people slowly turned into like zombie raccoons or something like that, like, you know,
like Zombievers.
Yeah. That was the exact plot to Zombievers. That was a good movie.
Yeah, we did. Huh.
Yeah, yeah, we do a lot of animal attack movies. And it's weird.
But, yeah, so, like, I think the problem with this film, the main problem, is that they had no money and they tried to do something way too ambitious. What?
It's like, the main problem was they have no money. Welcome to Microvember.
No, but what I'm saying is they went too ambitious for no money. You can make the Blair Witch on 10 grand. You can make whatever on, you know, on a couple thousand dollars. You can make, you know, there's a reason that there's so many like mumblecore movies that are made on like nothing, because that kind of stuff doesn't really cost much money. But this, they tried to do way too much with 5 grand. And also, I don't know. I felt like that. What?
I don't think it's really like a strike against somebody to be ambitious.
You should know your limits. But no, I agree. And that's why I want to bump it up a little more, like as far as my rating, because it's not that I didn't enjoy this movie. I thought the entertainment value was there. And I thought that it was funny. But never like super funny, you know?
Yeah, there was a few like, you know, laugh out loud moments. God, I hate saying that.
Really? You laughed out loud during this movie?
Like, not like a, oh my God, like whatever, but like a, ha, like one of those laugh, you know, like where you make an audible sound is what I mean by laugh out loud.
Yeah. There's a few moments.
You know, no, I mean, there was a few of them, like I liked a lot. Or a couple of the reoccurring jokes, you know, like at the beginning.
So tasteless.
Yeah, so tasteless and sophomoric. And then like any time it showed back up, he's like, oh, that's tasteless and sophomoric. Like every single time.
Yeah,
and then the taser one, right? Like every time they got tased, they would say like a specific thing. Because like what the mayor was like, there's a taser and it's like electricity that they can't fuck with or whatever, like. Something like that, right? Yeah. And then every time somebody got tased, they would be like, oh, it's electricity that I can't fuck with. And like, it made me laugh every time. But I think also a lot of the other jokes, just like the bulk of it, kind of fell a little bit flat. Like,
it
was like, oh, that was kind of funny, or okay, whatever. But, you know, there was a few parts that I thought were really funny, but...
I do remember one of the laugh out loud moments. That moment that I actually laughed out loud at this movie. All right, so this backwoods character, it's toward the end, and he set up like bear traps to get the raccoons, and then he steps in it, and he's and then he takes another step and goes right into another bear trap. I don't know
why. Because it shows him setting up the bear traps earlier, right? But it's like during this montage, and so like you think he's setting them like far apart,
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like two steps in a row. Step. No, I laughed out loud at that. But overall, like, I think it would be fun, like, if we were, like, younger and, like, drunk, like, yeah. Party type, oh, you know?
Yeah. The second drinking montage made me laugh out loud, too.
Oh, yeah, whenever they're gearing up for war, yeah. And then they're like, let's get ripped!
Yeah. Just start. Well, no, because it's like, because they're like, what do we do now? And he's like, well, my uncle hunts, and he always does it shit-faced. And it's like, all right! And then it's like another drinking montage.
Yeah, so I mean, this film...
So there were some, like, sparks of really funny stuff in there. Mm-hmm. But I just think some of it was just... Meh.
Yeah. I text you at like the 40 minute mark and I was like, God, this movie seems like it's been going on forever. But immediately at that point, it picks up and gets great. Like, great for a little bit and then fun for the next.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It was like, fun.
I agreed. Like, at the beginning, it does take a long time for things to get started. Okay. And then actually at that 40 minute mark is like the campfire scene, right? Mm-hmm. And he takes the picture, right? You know what part I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I know. And like, right. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, shit's about to go down. And that was, and I checked the timing, right? Mm-hmm. And it was like 40:01.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, no. Right, like, I text you, like, saying that I'm 40 minutes in, and that was like 39 minutes. Send the text, yeah. Like sitting there, and then it gets much yeah, better. So I was like, man, I'm going to have to start texting Brian whenever I'm bored during other movies. Because in my head, I forced that to happen by texting. You know, I jinxed the boredom.
Yeah, you impacted a movie made 10 years ago by your text message.
But I thought, okay, so... You know, it was ambitious and it was fun. And unlike a lot of the, like I mentioned 2 weeks ago or whatever, a lot of trauma distributed movies rely a lot on just like trash value, basically, mm-hmm. shock value and stuff like that. This really wasn't like that. Did you feel? It was much.
No, I mean, it had some poop stuff, right? But it was like animal poop. And for some reason, it feels different than to me.
Right, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, there was the scatapult, which that scene was amazing. Just because, like, all of a sudden the raccoons started talking, uh-huh. like, but to each other in raccoon voices, and he's like, "This is never going to work." And he's like, "Shut up, Jerry!"
And another guy's like, "What's a scatapult?" Yeah. And then he's like, "Your mom." Yeah.
But that was after the 40 minute mark. Yep. Like, seriously, if you're going to watch this movie and you are on the fence about it, like as you're watching it, it at least give it to the past the 40 minute mark.
Yeah.
Because it's a huge turn and it is much more enjoyable at that point.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, it's a promising, I don't know what the guy's done since.
One thing.
What was that? Do you remember?
American Mare.
Huh.
In 2009. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it shows... This guy definitely shows promise. And
apparently that's a documentary.
Oh, really?
About him running for mayor in his town.
Well, I mean, he shows, like, a lot of promise. Because I've definitely seen a lot worse for, you know, super crazy low budget. I don't think he shows like the kind of promise Peter Jackson showed in, you know, Bad Taste or any of that. But
well, I think what's different about Bad Taste in particular than most people's like early low budget like film works is the amount of time and effort he put into that.
Yeah.
You know, like how long did it take to make Bad Taste?
I don't
like,
know.
It was years. Like 5 or 7 years, something like that.
Yeah. Something
enough like that. Enough to where he gained like 60 pounds or whatever and played a different character through it.
Mm-hmm. No, it was fun. I liked it. However, I honestly can't really recommend it.
Okay. Like, no, that's fair.
I think like if somebody's down for like a movie night with friends where they're going to be drinking, you know, there has to be like a lot of things for me to actually give a recommendation. Can't just give a blanket recommendation on this because I feel that honestly, it's a 2 out of 5, maybe 2.5 out of yeah. 5. And not that it's failing, because if this was a $30,000 movie, it would be really good. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. the special effects execution stuff would have been better, which would have led to a better overall movie, you know? Mm-hmm. I just felt like a lot of them trying to make props was bad. Like, where they literally would just write on poster board and stuff and put it out there. And
I kind of liked that. Like, the advertisements in the store and stuff, and it was just like, buy guns.
Yeah, smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I thought that was funny, but like, welcome to Beaver Creek. I mean, couldn't even do a wooden sign. Like, I don't know.
Dude, those wood burning kits are like $40.
It felt like a real, real ragtag production, but I liked it. So I don't know. I thought about not giving it a rating, but we kind of have to rate the things.
I like how at the beginning of the podcast, we're like, we're not even going to rate things.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, like,
you kind of have to, I guess.
Well, yeah, because then because we look for the positives and the negatives on everything. You know, hell, I found something to bitch about on Mad Max, and
it was just too damn good.
I don't like that. It makes me expect so much more out of other movies. I'll find things that could be improved on anything almost, and also things to like on things that weren't quite as strong, you know? So I think our rating should always be kind of taken with a grain of salt, and people find out what they like, you know, because hell, we're just two guys. Sorry. You know, but it was fun. It just out of all the animal movies stuff that we've done, this is my least favorite. It's nowhere near as good as Zombievers or Rise of the Animals. Mm-hmm. And out of Microvember, this is The Weakling. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. It was fun movie. I mean, it wasn't like, it wasn't super consistent, like with the comedy and everything like that. Because I mean, it is a spoof. It's not like supposed to be scary or anything like that.
What?
I do appreciate that they gave all of the raccoons names in the credits.
Uh huh. I thought that was fun.
But yeah, I'd have to go. I think I'm a little bit higher on it, but I'd still say 2.5, maybe 3 would be pushing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Because our rating system's so skewed, it's hard to give a 3, because 3.5s are, like, our good movies.
I think 3 is average.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, a 3.5 is like, oh, yeah, I really enjoyed it, but it just wasn't great, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, we should have done it out of 10. It's a lot easier.
Because then everything would be getting 5s.
7s.
Yeah, it was like sixes and stuff.
But yeah, I don't know. I would say check it out. See if it is your cup of tea, especially if you're into movies like Critters and a lot of those like 80s cheesy puppet killer or puppet animal killer movies. You know, the ones that never dominated the market but were always kind of fun.
But yeah, I mean, and also it's free on Amazon Prime. Right now, if you have access to Amazon Prime.
If you don't, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, Coons by Travis Irvine is like the writer-director guy.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break.
Back with some books.
Yeah, coming back with some literature.
Long Box Small Talk is a comedic yet informative view into the world of comic book media with a bearded man child and a punk rock never was been. Join them every Wednesday on the B-Movie and eBooks Network. That's Long Box Small Talk on B-Movies and eBooks.com.
All right, and we're back with some literature reviews.
How we are with our literature.
I'm not even going to finish that. Anyway, so, I guess I'll go first.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's, so just to reiterate, it is Microvember. Mm-hmm. So we're doing, you know, on the movie side of things, we're doing low budget films. I forgot what the cap is that we put it on.
I don't think we did
really low budget films.
Yeah, like I think all of them, what was the Slashing's budget? Like 8,000 or something?
8 or 10, something
yeah.
like
that. Yeah. So, yeah, we're doing stuff that the average person could save up and fund over, I don't know, a few years. Not like or, movie studio money.
Or like a group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but then we're on the book side of things, we're doing short stories. Right. Mm-hmm. So I did Mobsters, Monsters, and Nazis by Dan O'Brien, which also has illustrations.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So, all right. Yeah. The other thing left out of the Microvember is that me and you aren't doing the same books this month.
Oh,
we're
yeah,
just
yeah.
covering more ground by doing different things.
Yeah. Because they're short stories and everything like that.
So I mean, it would have been easy for us to read them both, but we just haven't. Anyway. No,
and then like today, we didn't even know what each other read until like today.
Yeah. So, okay. You said it's illustrated. Is this a Kindle book?
Yeah. Yeah. by Steve Furchond did the art, but yeah. And so you can see like it comes up with pictures.
Oh, cool.
I've never had illustrations on a Kindle book before. And so I'm excited. anyway, it is a noir book, like a crime noir book. Kind of, I don't know, ambiguously set in the 30s. It doesn't really ever say, and that's okay because the whole tone of the book is seemingly like, here's a crime story, and then I'm going to throw in random things. Okay. But not in a bad way. Like, it starts off with basically the main character. His name's Derek, mm-hmm. Derek Diamond, private investigator. Right.
That's a solid name.
Solid name. And they kept, and like somebody references, like, you know, they're not as hard as they, or you're not as hard as they say you are, like Diamond, hard as Diamond. Anyway, so it's a basically a hard-boiled detective story, and it starts off with him down at the docks basically getting a drop off from some courier, right? And mm-hmm. it's like this bird statue, I guess, like a maybe a callback to the Maltese Falcon sort of deal, right? Yeah. But then he gets it. And there's like some supernatural stuff going on. Like it kind of calls out to him and he opens it up, like he pushes on it and the bird opens and there's like clockwork in it. Mm-hmm. And then like he hears weird voices and stuff. Right. So there's like sort of a supernatural bent to it. Mm-hmm. And then basically he gets clocked and this guy steals it from him. Right. And you're like, oh, okay, whatever. And he's like, Matt, you know, he'd been hired by this guy he keeps referring to as the fat man, right? And he's like, I got to go explain what happened, basically, or try to find the guy who stole it. And then things start getting weird.
Like, right? I'm trying to think, is this kind of like a Kung Fury type noir? Like, is it bizarro fiction or how is
it's bizarre, but it's not a comedy or anything like that. It's played straight.
Okay.
It's just like as you go through the book, it just increasingly gets weirder and weirder, right? Because like some sort of supernatural element, you know, is not necessarily against noir. Right. Or against what like you would think of that. Like think about Blade Runner. But I know that's not supernatural, it's sci-fi. But think about like Indiana Jones. Right. Which is more pulp fiction, but still kind of has like the dude on an investigation to, you know, solve some mystery. There's a femme fatale character and all that junk, right? Has noir elements, but so like, supernatural isn't necessarily that much of a curveball. Uh-huh. But then the next page is because he had been like stalked in the shadows by two men, right? And then not the guy who beat him up, an additional two men, right? And it turns out they're lizard people.
Really?
And then he goes to meet the fat man to tell him what happened. And he's basically like a fat Cthulhu type person. And he's got like a werewolf bodyguard and just all kinds of weird stuff. And it's totally played normal. Nothing's weird about it. You know, it's just like, these are just other people that live in this world. Werewolves are real. Lizard people happen. Normal, right?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it was kind of strange because it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I realized the title of it's Mobsters and Monsters and Nazis, right?
Mm-hmm. But it's still, mobsters and Nazis are real, so.
but I mean, like, you could also think of it as the other way, like monsters, like terrible human beings. Right.
Yeah.
And so I guess I wasn't 100% sure what I was expecting, but, and then, you know, it just kind of continues that thing. He kind of shows, you know, there's an exchange with the fat man. There's an introduction of the femme fatale character, everything like standard noir tropes. Right. And basically he's got to go back to get the, he's got to find the, figurine that was stolen from him. Basically, that's his job, right? And, you know, he's talking to the femme fatale in the alley. He gets jumped by the lizard people, like fighting, you know, that sort of thing. And then I'm trying to think of, oh, there's also introduction of Nazi characters. Apparently, there's just Nazis in here too. And I think they're in the U.S. Like,
so
maybe
is it it's like never, possibly if
like alternate history sort of
thing. Yeah,
yeah. They won. It's not, no, it's not Nazis taking over, because it mentions like, he was like, well, it's a free country. And then she's like, well, not if those Nazis had anything to say about it. So they're just literally just Nazis just living in America. like it's totally normal. But basically, the whole thing ends up being a setup for the next chapter. Right. I think this is a serial. I actually downloaded the second part of it too. I don't know how far it goes. But he's on a mission now to collect the figurine. And then, spoiler alert, it turns out that the Nazi guy had kind of used the fat man as a go-between to get him to get the bird. And it has like something to do with some machine that the Nazis are building, and then that's it. So it there's this deeper mystery behind it. I mean, it was a pretty quick read. I mean, it was like 30 pages, something like that. So it was fairly, it was longer than the story I read last time, but you know, it was pretty hard boiled, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm saying that whenever I'm talking about noir, but I mean, it was like quick and to the point, you know, like it wasn't overly flowery. There were lots of descriptive things, but it would just be like one simple simile or metaphor. It was very succinct. Right. And so he was able to pack quite a bit of information and, you know, set up in those few pages that he had. And I'm interested to see where it goes. I want to read the rest of it, or at least the next part, and see if it holds my attention. But I don't know. It was interesting. And I like the ideas that are in it, like the world that he's making, because it's like this weird alternate, I guess, 30s, 1930s. Right. I mean, if we're going by our history, it would have to be at least, what, 36, whenever the Nazis came around. Right. And he does mention the Roaring Twenties as being in the past. So maybe, I don't know. But it's also an alternate history with like werewolf bodyguards and Cthulhu people. Right. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, that sounds interesting. Sounds, yeah. What was it, just straight noir? Because whenever you bring out all these people, it sounds like it would be more like bizarro fiction, like Eraserhead Press type stuff. But if it
was, what exactly do you mean by bizarro fiction?
It's like, you know, certain people write it. I mean, honestly, it's just kind of like that. I don't know. Can't, what's his name? Carlton Mellick the third Rites Bizarro. Some, I don't know. It's a subgenre. It's not quite horror, although sometimes it has horror elements, and it does shit like, you know, alternate timelines and weird mm-hmm. monsters, but played normal. I mean, it's just crazy shit. You know, well,
then maybe it is. But I mean, it was that in the context of your, I don't want to say average, but your in the confines of your private eye detective noir film or book, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know, where it's just like private detective on a mission. It's just there happens to be like lizard people.
No, I mean, it sounds cool. It actually sounds like Mario Brothers, the movie.
Kinda.
You know, that gym.
You know, and there's the illustrations and stuff. Some of them actually, like the lizard people actually do look like Koopas? The Koopas. Yeah.
Wow.
Because they have the longer snout lizard faces.
Yeah. Huh. No, I mean, it sounds cool. It just,
but they're wearing suits and stuff. It's awesome. Like all the monsters are just wearing like normal human clothes and
kind of like Ugly Americans. You remember that show?
Yeah.
Where they all just have like just
normal jobs and stuff.
Yeah, but they would flip everything backwards. So like if there was a merman, it would have like a fish head and legs and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's cool. So what would you give that? I mean, it's hard to rate these
short stories.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was effective in piquing my interest, you mm-hmm. know, and it was, I don't know. I mean, I liked it. I thought the story was interesting. Probably 3.5. Little,
well, cool.
You know, I mean, for a short story, you know, because we've talked about it before. Sometimes it's hard to like either be a complete story or really give you enough to make you want to read the next one. Whenever mm-hmm. it's like short like that, I think it was good on both counts. Like, I don't know, I enjoyed it.
Well, cool.
So we'll say 3.5.
I mean, it sounds good, huh?
As above average. So,
yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, I did one called Give Me Something Good to Eat by Shane McKenzie. This is an odd story, but I don't want to give it away because it's literally a 12-page story or 15-page. I don't know. It's not very long. Mm-hmm. It's part of the DOA2 Extreme Horror Collection, which I highly recommend. For extreme horror, that's so good. So, so, so good.
What's it stand for?
Huh? DOA? Dead on arrival?
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's like the cover's like a toe tag.
And I didn't know if it was like a something else.
All right. I got what you're saying, I guess.
I mean, it could have been something.
No, I got you. No, I mean, it doesn't say Dead on Arrival, but I would assume since it's a cover toe tag and then it's Extreme Horror Collection. Anyway,
yeah.
But no, Give Me Something Good to Eat. This is a weird, weird story, but I friggin' loved it. Like, it starts off with, like, parents tying their children up in a basement and concerned whether or not the ropes are tight enough. And they're,
well, I mean, yeah.
Then they immediately,
if you're gonna tie your children in a basement.
Well, yeah, and the kid's like screaming, like I pray to God, or the dad's like, I pray to God the ropes are holding, you know. And like mm-hmm. they're like, all right, we got to go out to the streets. And the kid is like, please, please untie me and all this stuff. And they're like, so they go out to the streets and they light a pumpkin, like a jack-o'-lantern. And all the neighbors have lighted jack-o'-lanterns mm-hmm. except for like one house. And they're like, shit, I hope whatever their names are, I hope they've done it. And so they're freaking out. And so it's Halloween night and they're all gathered at the end of the street, like with shotguns and stuff, like freaking out. And so they investigate like the house that they, you know, that didn't light the jack-o'-lantern, and the people are dead and the kids aren't tied up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so Anyway, it turns out, you know, on Halloween night in this universe, all the kids turn into evil demonic monsters that mm-hmm. attack. And so that you have to just tie them up because they will eat you. And so anyway, it's crazy as shit. Like they're like the kids that are coming out are like playing leapfrog and speaking in demonic voices, like coming at them. But it's not played for laughs. Like it's really, really good. Like I said, it's not long. It's like 12 pages, maybe 15. I don't know. It's not very long. You can read it.
So you said you didn't want to spoil it. Did you just spoil it all?
No, because you get where it's going.
Yeah.
Like really quick. No, I didn't spoil because it's more of a character story. You're worried about the characters, even though the situation's what you're going to remember when you're reading it. You're more worried about what the characters, you know, who the kids are going to get and how this is going to end up playing out. I will say it's jacked up. I, as we all know, like, you know, dark humor and extreme horror quite a bit. It's pretty jacked up. It's not like... It's not quite as far as like don't read, but it's mm-hmm. not much more subdued than that. It's a really, really cool story. I don't know what I can rate it. I mean, 4.5, like,
wow.
It's really, really good. But it definitely, you know, it's not going to be for everyone because as is the short story collection. Not going to be for everyone because it's all very extreme horror. Like there's not one of these stories that I've read out of here that didn't have one point that almost like repulsed you, you know? Like there was like a really, really memorable one that Jack Ketchum did that was amazing in it. You know what? There's one I was actually kind of let down. Monica J. O'Rourke. She wrote one. Well, nah, I won't get into it. There's a few weak links, but it's worth your $2.99. Definitely worth your $2.99. So yeah, check it out.
Oh yeah. I forgot to mention, mine, the first one was like 99 cents. But I think there's like two or three other ones in the series that are free.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Well, so it's cool. Like an introductory price. I mean, not bad.
Yeah. So. I mean, normally you see that backwards. The first one's free and then the other ones cost money.
I think they might be on sale right now. But it's good to
cast the wide net, get mm-hmm. people sucked in, and then, yeah. But, well, cool.
Yeah, so I also like how, you know, because you mentioned that the story you read is not for everyone. I like how that's a disclaimer that we have on like 90% of the things that we do.
Well, I don't think it's always there on the movies,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's there a lot on the books. Because
do you think that like because books are more like sort of intimate, sort of personal experience that's like that?
I think it's because we read jacked up books a lot.
Yeah. I can see that.
You know what I'm saying? Like
maybe I'm thinking too much into this.
Yeah. Like there's a big difference between the average Stephen King book and the average Matt Shaw or book, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah, I can see that.
And so we kind of tend to read a lot of the time on the more extreme horror slant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, this is really, really good. If you're a fan of splatterpunk, I would say definitely grab this book. It's like essential reading. Cool. I will go that far. But anyway, yeah, with that, are you good?
I think we're good. Wait, is this the end of Microvember?
Nah, we got one more week. So okay, actually, the thinking. First week it's, in December, it'll be released like on December 2nd.
But it'll still be
Microvember.
Do we know what we're going to do?
Maybe we could do like a real low budget one about Santa Claus where we could kind of bridge the gap. All right, this so is
Santa Claus
topic.
Conquers the Martians.
I'm down.
Does that count as low budget?
Are we still on mic?
Yeah. We're totally on mic.
All right.
I mean, we could cut it out if we want. It's just lately we've been announcing what we're going to do.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that. No, I don't know what the budget is on that.
All right, we'll look it up. Join us next week for something.
Yeah, make sure hit us at BNE Pod on Twitter
and the Facebook.
Yeah, and follow our sister podcasts. Give them a listen. The Adventures of Toxic City and Longbox Small Talk. And with that,
I think we're good.
All right.
You just heard is part of the B&E Network, brought to you by bmoviesandebooks.com.